You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Cornflake.
So we host the Flopcast.
We cover nerd and geek subjects of all types, but this is sort of a sillier, goofier side of geekdom, I'd say.
We love to talk about music, especially funny music.
We talk about comic books, conventions.
Saturday morning cartoons.
Oh, yeah. I'd say if you're going to put the Flopcast in Brady Bunch terms, we're like the Cousin Oliver of podcasting. And we do a ridiculous new Flopcast episode every week.
What is wrong with us?
We really have nothing else to do. We're part of the Earth Station One podcast network.
And you can find us at flopcast.net.
And welcome again to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. I am your host, The Monster, back to give you a 4-episode review of returning shows on the DC/CW. We have Supergirl, we have The Flash, we have Legends of Tomorrow, and Arrow. So for this podcast, I'm planning to review all 4 episodes of each show for this past week that aired its premiere. So for Supergirl, we're starting season 3 with an episode called Girl of Steel. And then we have Flash season 4 called The Flash Reborn. And then we have Legends of Tomorrow starting season 3 called Arubicon. And season 6 of Arrow called Fallout. I'm going to record my thoughts after each episode that I watch. Very similar to what I did with the Heroes vs. Aliens podcast. So, hopefully, Supergirl won't be the letdown like it did last time. But in any case, I'm really happy about the fact that we have all these heroes coming back for another season. And I'll be back in a moment to give you my first review of Supergirl.
The decision I made... He couldn't have made that sacrifice. But me, I couldn't have lived with myself if I hadn't. I will always make the decision I made. I am not a human. I tried to be, but I'm not. Kara Danvers was a mistake.
So the first episode again for Supergirl is referred to as the Girl of Steel. We have the opening in which she is having, I guess, a dream sequence in which her hand is gliding over these tall grass, wheat field things that I'm just like, I've seen that thing done too many times, starting with Gladiator. And I'm thinking that there was another, the Inhumans. Medusa, when she's on Earth, she's also doing the hand thing over the grass thing. So I'm like, when we see Supergirl doing this, I'm like, come on, just stop. It's just annoying me. In any case, we do see her having a moment in which she has Monel back in her life. And then she sees a woman across the field
And as she's getting closer, you know, we don't know who she is. And then all of a sudden, boof, she wakes up from the dream. So we don't know too much in the way of details. I'm assuming maybe it's her mother, but we don't get a confirmation as to who the woman is. But in any case, it flashes out of that moment into where Supergirl is in reality. And in a kind of a nice moment in which this was done before in, I think, Man of Steel and even The Return of Superman, in which Supergirl is floating and hovering in air. And she's listening to all the sounds and she's drowning out all the noise about what's going around her until she gets this situation in which she is now flying down to help out. So again, nice little, not much of an Easter egg, but a nice little homage to those two previous movies. So we do get the opening scene in which she is going after this truck that is firing on a couple of police, and of course her sister's there. One of the cool things that I thought it was interesting was after, of course, she saves the day and is able to stop the truck, the situation leading up to that moment was that that truck was going to barrel down over this family that were in their minivan. And she stopped it, and the kid was like, "You saved us, Supergirl." And like, you know, Supergirl was very indifferent to that feeling. Normally, she would be with him, may say something in passing, and then flies off. But here, she just shrugs it off. So basically, the effects of having lost Monel since from last season has really played really a big part in who she is. Pretty much throughout this whole episode, she is not the type of person that is not so much the carefree girl, because she does have a lot on her plate, but because she feels a bit of sadness on her part that everyone else is living their life. I got that feeling all too well. Is that there's no joy for her. She does what she has to do because she is Supergirl. But outside of that, there's nothing else for her to do. Even though she's amongst friends, you know, and they made reference to, you know, the party that we have, you know, to get drinks, whatever, you never come anymore. So I get that feeling. So she's going through this whole depression phase. And again, it's quite understandable. There is no reason to discount her feelings. I mean, if you're in that situation, if you were to lose someone, of course, you would feel that way. And it's hard to kind of go on living your own life when, again, your life is not what you want. Later on in this episode, we quickly see that Cat Grant has been made press secretary for the current president. So she's doing that thing. So she's not at CatCo for very long, although she was briefly in the last season, a couple episodes. So I'm sure she'll be around later on. But at least for right now, James is still in charge of CatCo. And the other big thing is that we have Alex and Maggie, who eventually are going to get married. But because of the situation that Maggie doesn't want to have a large wedding, it's because of the fact that she doesn't have her father walk down the aisle with her to give her away. And of course, that honor, she does go to John to actually ask that favor of him. And it was a really beautiful and touching moment because of those two characters having kind of their own way, a father and daughter relationship, even though it's more of a working relationship, but they have gone close together in that kind of sense. Now, the other thing is that the B plot is having to do with with Morgan Edge and Lena Luthor. Since CatCo looks like it was going to be up for sale, Edge was going to buy it out. Lena Luthor came in to buy out the shares, so it staves off the kind of press that he was looking to control, because again, he's looking to develop properties in the waterfront, in which we find there's a nuclear sub that he is working with a character named Bloodsport, in which they use a couple of torpedoes to blow up a ceremony that was given to Supergirl. Now, the other situation within that situation, there was a girl who bumped into Maggie, and the parent went after her and said, you need to apologize to her and so forth. So we have a quick little moment about them, but they were just there to see the Supergirl ceremony. So as the ceremony was going on, and then the big fireball and the big kind of a mini earthquake going on because of the rubble going on, there was, I guess, some of the metal awning for the stage came down onto the girl, and the mother, who was also there knocked to the ground, was trying to get up and then was struggling to get help. She wound up lifting this heavy metal piece off her daughter, and even though she was able to recover her daughter, she noticed that she left like bend marks into the metal poles that she was able to lift. So we don't know what that story is going to be or how that will develop. Now, last year they were talking about having Rain be this new villain for this year, and that didn't turn out to be that, because the very last thing we saw was that because the torpedoes hitting the side of the city revealed there was another ship, which we saw from the last season, that seems to be, I guess, embedded inside and is now open. So I'm assuming that we're going to get Rain from that point on, but I still don't know the situation about this other character that we just briefly saw, in which she saved her daughter in that situation. But the other cool thing, normally they don't have a lot of money to spend on effects, and when they do, it's pretty damn cool. And one of them is Supergirl lifting the damn submarine out of the water. Really, really fantastic. That's the kind of stuff that you would see towards the end of the season or mid-season situations coming up. But really, a really good episode, and not that I always want to see Supergirl in a very dark place, but it's a nice change of pace to have a situation in which she's not happy about, in which she has all these powers, and yet the very simple thing about what she can't do to correct it, she can't fix herself, is a situation that she has to deal with. And I think that's the frustration, that it's turning her more, that, you know, when there's someone in trouble, she can fly and lift up, you know, objects or put out fires or whatever it is. This is something that's brand new to her. She's never been in love. So I'm hoping eventually that Mon-El will be able to come back. But until that lead line atmosphere that was launched to put out all the Daxamites out, that they'll figure out a way to get Mon-El back. So overall, a very cool episode. I'm very happy to see Supergirl once more. I'm looking really forward to what's going to happen for this season, as well as the crossover episodes, which I just heard recently, but I'm not going to give any spoilers as to what's going on. But again, it is coming very, very soon. So let's move on to The Flash and the first episode of season 4 called The Flash Reborn.
My name is Iris West.
Will you marry me?
Yes. And I was supposed to marry the fastest man alive.
Keep loving. Keep running. For me.
I promised him I'd run. So that's what I've been doing. Running. As fast as I can.
How could you possibly be fine?
Dad, what do you want me to do? Curl up in a ball and cry all day?
Sometimes I feel like if I believe in something hard enough, that'll make it real. I miss my friend.
Barry's not coming back.
You don't know that.
Barry told me to be strong, and being strong.
Guys, what are we looking at?
Expecting someone else?
Hey.
I don't understand. This should have worked.
Dead bang, fellas.
Please go to the pilot!
You're up against some bad hombres.
And what do you think you're going to do against us with a sword?
Bring me the Flash, or else your city falls.
The hell kind of sword is that? If we don't offer up the Flash, people are going to die, and that's going to be on us.
I made a few slight modifications, as Captain Solo would say. Iris, you of all people, how can you not be in on this?
I've got a lock on something!
It's him! It's him!
Now, Cisco!
So now we are on to The Flash, Season 4, Episode 1. Again, the episode is called The Flash Reborn. We do get a cool scene in which Cisco as Vibe and Kid Flash, which is Wally West, are working together and bringing down criminals for Central City. And at the helm of all this, we have Iris, who, after Barry has left, is now 6 months since the incident from last season, has been kind of not so much the brains behind the organization, but she is the central lead in which she coordinates her father, Wally, and Cisco into making sure that in the absence of the Flash, that there is some type of semblance, some organization that of similar to Team Flash. But as Kid Flash tried to put it, it's like Team Kid Flash. And it's like, no, that doesn't sound right. It's too many damn words in the process. So, but still, it's enjoyable to see them work together finally. So the other thing that Iris has been trying to work through is through work to kind of move on from the situation with not having Barry around. But the problem lies is that, like in many relationships, a spouse or someone who you loved has died. Yes, there's going to be a mourning period, and then you get to that point where there's acceptance because that's the way life goes. But it's kind of this there's no final moment or closure that she has in her life. So she's still trying to fill that void with work. And many of us go through that situation to kind of help ease the pain because you don't know how else to deal with that situation. And some people turn to other vices, and there's going to be something positive out of this is that she is really the headpiece of really getting this team back in action. And even though it's not working as much as it was before, at least she's doing exactly what Barry is asking her and just to keep on with her life. So the other thing is that we now finally get in the meat of the story is that we have a samurai that is asking for the Flash. So Kid Flash and Vibe go out and try to take out the samurai, and that didn't work out so well. But it was kind of cool just seeing them trying to work through this and making little quips by calling it, you know, the Holy Ronin, which is a nice little homage to that comic and to that character. But what I liked about this is that what Cisco realizes, and it's a nice change from last season, is that he misses Barry and he needs Barry, which is a complete 180 from what happened from last season, in which, if you remember from Flashpoint, throughout the whole season, Barry really changed the timeline. And in the process, Cisco lost his brother altogether. And of course, there are other consequences down the road. But really, Cisco really had it out for Barry the entire season. I was not expecting. I was expecting maybe an episode or two, and then he'll get over it. No, it was play throughout. So, but now, in this season, he really needs him. And again, from that alien Heroes versus the Aliens crossover, that's where it was a kind of a changing point for Cisco to realize what he was doing was kind of similar to what Barry would do. So he eased up about the hatred. But
at least now it's back to, I need to get Barry back. You know, he needs him really desperately. So who does he turn to? He finds out that Caitlin's working in a bar, who is not really Frost, Killer Frost, but she is working in a bar. So the two of them talk briefly, and he encourages her to come back to help get Barry out of the Speed Force, and which they kind of do. They were not expecting the immediate release of Barry. Well, they were expecting the immediate release of Barry at the location they were at, in which harkens back to the testing area in which, from season one, that he was being kind of like a runway that they were using for Barry to test out his running abilities. But that didn't happen. Somehow, he got ejected from the Speed Force and was far from the city, and he was completely naked and had a beard. We find out Barry basically really skitzing out and is having a hard time processing language, so he's starting to write this kind of weird cryptology symbols and forms. And he's saying this is a new way of thinking about physics and all this, but he is just not the Barry that we all know. What Sisko was trying to think about Barry's situation is that maybe he's so far advanced from everyone else is that maybe he had the answers to life, the universe, and everything. In which Caitlin replied, so this is Barry's way of telling that the answer is 42, which is a beautiful reference to The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So if you know that book and you know that reference, it makes complete sense. And I'm not going to go into the details because I'm assuming you read the book. But the moment right after that, Sisko takes a moment, says, I really have missed you. And that kind of connection, I totally get. So the other day, there was this t-shirt that was on sale, or at least being advertised on Facebook. And it says that all I care about is Star Trek and like maybe three people and food. Now, except for Star Trek Discovery, which is not part of that equation at the moment, that's about right. I like maybe about three people. And those three people that I care about are basically people that would get that kind of reference of what 42 is. That's the kind of situation that I get. And that's why I love that moment between Caitlin and Sisko. Because there was a genuine friendship and a level of understanding that really geeky friends would understand. So I grew to love that moment more than Return of Barry. So not that I didn't care that Barry's back, but that was an honest and beautiful moment for those two people to, who are basically separated because Caitlin is dealing with a whole Killer Frost issue and she hasn't been back since Barry's disappearance. So it's nice to have that be brought back. All right, so one of the things with the samurai was that he wanted the Flash, and even though Kid Flash pretended to be the Flash and got it dressed up in his uniform, that didn't work out. So basically, Barry eventually was kind of snapped back into Barry as the Flash, as Iris put herself in jeopardy. So rather than having her be the damsel in distress, she put herself in that situation on purpose so that Barry would go after her. And it was fantastic. The ending of this turned out to be some type of android, robot, non-humanoid life form, whatever you want to call it. And behind it, the final moment in which we have this person sitting on this chair, I'm like, I don't know who this person is. And the first thing that came to my head was Metron. I'm like, is that going to be the villain for this season? So I got really excited, and then I started reading about who that person was, and it's referred to as the Thinker. So I don't know too much about the Thinker, but that seems to be the baddie for this year, which is a non-speedster, which, thank God, they're moving away from that. So overall, it's a good episode. Barry finally coming back to himself, and I'm okay with that. But again, I miss that whole team dynamic that was fun and interactive with each other. But again, they did have some great moments on their own, like with Joe and Iris, Cisco and Caitlin. So I'm really ready to get to see the whole team back, and of course, eager to see Harrison Wells come back from Earth 2, as well as the Golden Age Flash, and basically just have even more fun like they've been doing. So I'm, again, happy with the way things have started. I'm looking forward to the season. So let's move on to the first episode of Legends of Tomorrow.
Guys? I think we broke time.
Each of these dots represents an anachronism.
It's going to take a lifetime to clean these up, maybe several.
Which is why your services are no longer required. The Time Bureau is capable of getting the job done without the mess.
You and your sorry excuse for a team could never handle it.
We're about to find out.
Welcome one and all to the best show on Earth.
We're bringing the circus to the circus.
Hi, Clown!
You three released a giant saber-toothed tiger.
I always wanted to go to Vietnam.
Welcome to my kingdom.
If I die today because of a telepathic gorilla, I'm going to be very upset.
Plot a course for Tinseltown, because we are going to save Hollywood.
There's only one woman in history has this effect on men.
The one and only Helen of Troy.
Adore.
Well, we seem to have a bit of a Freaky Friday situation.
You're me and I'm you?
I'm Jax.
And I'm Martin.
Damn, I look good.
That corpse you buried was a vampire from the future, you idiot.
Kill it!
Whoa, Mick!
Are you on drugs?
You have no idea.
Mr. Haywood is under the influence of a hallucinogenic compound.
The legends have things under control.
Using your team to fix anything is like doing brain surgery with a chainsaw.
On behalf of the Time Bureau, I am placing you and your team under arrest.
Oh, lady, why are you so mean?
When did a legend ever go quietly? We got a new problem. Rip has been hiding something from us. Something even the Time Bureau is afraid of.
There is a war coming. History needs you to be ready. You and the rest of the legends.
It's good to be back.
Sometimes we screw things up for the better.
That's a good motto. We should use that.
I really love this show.
This is amazing!
Howdy!
We're a team of outcasts and misfits. You're one of us.
See, now this, this is a time machine.
All right, so we are now going on to Legends of Tomorrow, Season 3, Episode 1, entitled Arubicon, which I guess it's a reference to Caesar crossing the Rubicon, I guess. So this episode picks up from the end of Season 2, in which time is broken. We see Big Ben in the city, we see dinosaurs. Basically, everything is run amok. So, to the rescue, we get the newly created Time Bureau by Rip Hunter, which is kind of cool. So, he is now replacing the Time Masters that we saw from Season 1. But it turns out to be more like Men in Black-ish, because they have the little memory wipe gun instead of the stick. But it's okay. I go along with that without a problem. So once the time has been fixed, Rip basically disbands the Legends. And for the next 8 months, these poor guys are not having the best of things in their lives. More so for Sarah, for Ray, and for Nate. Not so much for Jax or for Professor Stein, because Professor Stein, in the course of the story, finds out that his daughter is now pregnant, so he's going to be a grandfather. Whereas Jax, he dropped out basically from school, which he was going to go for his master's in engineering, I believe. As he put it, it's more fun to experience engineering with a time machine. So, and I get that. Sometimes when you're doing higher education, unless you put what you're learning into practical applications, you're not going to learn it. It's just it's regurgitation of information, if that's all it is to pass a class. So in order for it to make sense, in order for it to have meaning, you'd have to do something with it. So I get that. But I think the saddest one is with Sarah, who is now working in a retail store, kind of like a Bed Bath & Beyond, but it was called Shower, Sink, and Beyond, or something like that, some variation of that. And she wasn't having a good time with it, especially her douchey supervisor. And then Ray is working for a tech company that does more like a dating app. And he's out of his element because he's still working on his technology, but it's not compatible with what's going on with the company that he works for. And then Nate basically is a superhero. They're working in Central City. But at this time, Kid Flash is making the rounds, while I believe the real Flash is still stuck in the Speed Force in which he has been trapped. So I'm assuming this episode comes out before the events of the Flash Reborn episode, the one I just previously reviewed. But regardless, he is considered a second favorite superhero next to Kid Flash. And Kid Flash takes a lot of his steam because he was able to apprehend the villains or the criminals that Nate was trying to work with really quickly and over and done. So he's not having a good time either with his life outside of being a time traveler. The only one who's actually enjoying himself is actually turns out to be is Rory, who is in Aruba. And there's a convention going on, so that's where we get our Arubicon reference. But he's out drinking, having a good time. And then we get Caesar showing up on the beach for some reason. So we don't necessarily know how that happened. We don't know if it's a result of a delayed reaction from what the Legends created with time being broken. But there is a reference later on in which, after this episode is all wrapped up, Rip makes a mention about a character named Mollus, M-O-L-L-U-S, if I believe that's correct. I don't know too much about that character, but basically he is hoping that if need be, that the Legends could help that situation in the future, whatever that may be. Again, this is just the first episode, so there's still a lot more things that could happen along the way. So the whole basis of this episode goes back to the fact that Rory is the one that finds Caesar in Aruba. So he calls up Sarah, who then quits her job and gets the Legends together, basically, to commandeer the Wave Rider and then off to Aruba. So a couple of cool things that I liked about this. Again, it's these little moments in which characters like Rory, who has been one of my favorites, is holding up Caesar, being tied up, and he's eating his salad, and he's eating it, and he just makes this reference like, "Your salad sucks," referring to the Caesar salad, which is fantastic. Again, Rory doesn't have to deliver much, except these one type of snarky remarks every once in a while. I'm happy as can be. And of course, when the team finally gets back together, you know, they have this discussion that leads up into their new motto that Sometimes we screw things up for the better, which I love. And then finally, when at the end of the episode, when they captured Caesar, and then Professor Stein says, "We came, we saw," and then it was Ray and Nate going, "And we kicked Caesar's ass," which is a perfect moment for the Ghostbusters reference right there. But the two of them geeking out at that moment, again, fantastic. I love that. So one of the other dumb moments that I hate, not really a whole lot, but the one is that when Sarah visits the Caesar in the prison, she has the door open for no apparent reason other than to have a face-to-face discussion and for him to make some kind of gesture to be have her become his queen, and it's like it's pointless. But she pushes him back, door closes, and that's it. So it, like, why are you doing this? Considering how much I see the team respects her, even Rory calls her boss, everyone looks towards her as the leader. So this was just one of those weird things, like, why is she doing this dumb thing when she's the smartest one or the leader of the group? So the other moment I loved is that before Caesar was able to change history, Caesar got his mind wiped, but he was going to, Nate was going to take a selfie with Caesar. Another great moment that I loved. So again, it's always a lot of fun watching them interplay with each other and make these goofy references that nerds like me get. So I am having a fantastic time. So at the end, we do finally get Amaya, who is now channeling even more power than before. Because before, she would only be able to tap into one specific animal. And then that animal would then inhabit her body. And then she was able to fight with those abilities of that animal. But here she's projecting multiple animals and then sending them off on their way. So she's not even physically fighting them. She is channeling these animals and, like, force projecting these animals onto the victims, which are the soldiers raiding her village. So curious to see how this all plays out. I want to see how Mollus comes into the scheme of things in season 3. So again, a fantastic episode that I've enjoyed, and can't wait to see what happens for the rest of season 3. So let's get moved on to finally Arrow season 6 episode 1, called Fallout.
Now, if I was running around the city during the day and managing it as mayor, while running around at night frightening criminals as a vigilante, that really would make me a superhero. But I'm not. I'm just the mayor. Thank you very much. Every time that I'm out there as the Green Arrow, I'm a target of the threats that are out there and the threats that are undoubtedly coming.
Any reservations? Concerns about what comes next?
Of course not.
Want to tell me what happened?
No.
I don't know how to reach you.
You've been trouble fitting in at this age.
What? What are you talking about? I had Tommy.
I wouldn't call having a friend who helps you get into trouble fitting in.
This is for real. For real. Isn't it?
Me being around more?
And not the other guy?
You know something maybe a mayor should not know?
The time of vigilantes is coming to an end.
Sniper!
People take the law into their own hands. We've got anarchy.
Run!
Bad news is that you won't be able to scream anymore, but the good news is you'll be too dead to care.
You showed me a long time ago there were no true heroes or villains, only winners and losers, and I know which I want to be.
An eye for an eye.
I appreciate the meeting. I know that trust doesn't come easy, but you're the only person who can help. I am sorry, kid.
Slade!
going to be an incredibly insightful evening.
All right, so we are now finally on the last episode of this podcast, in which I'm going to be talking about Arrow. So if you remember from last season, the gang pretty much is on the island that Oliver Queen was stranded for the past 5 years. And Adrian Chase was basically making it a no-win scenario with Oliver, in which he had to either save his son, and then everyone on the island will be killed, or you killed Adrian Chase, and everyone else survives. So, basically what Oliver did was shot Adrian in the leg. He was able to save his son, but then he pulled a gun, shot himself, and since he was a dead man switch, kabooey, the whole island goes up in flames. Good ending. Can't wait to see how it all ends. Who survives? So the first episode we get 5 months later. Okay. I'm kind of nervous about this because after 5 years, my thinking was that we didn't have to worry about the damn island anymore, right? At all. No more island. No more flashbacks. First two seasons, fine. I got that. And I was on board with that. Third season, when he goes off to Hong Kong, it gets worse. Fourth season, a little better, but not that much. But at least the fifth season, it had to tie in the end of the 5 years of him being on the island to what happened in the first episode. So it did its job. So there's no reason for us to go back to the damn island, except we're zooming 5 months in the future, or 5 months later from that last episode. And here's the problem. We get an opening scene in which Arrow is fighting a bunch of bad guys on a dock. Obvious, because he wasn't on the island. Of course he would survive. But then he's talking to other people, and we see Diggle. Okay, he survived. Then we get Wild Dog. He survived. Okay, that's good. And then later on in the episode, we get Mr. Terrific, who is still alive. Okay. But then 3 minutes in to that first episode, I can't believe you're doing this. You're flashing back to the island again. This is what you're going to be doing for season 6? You're going to flash back to the island. Oh my god. Seriously. You really need to get off the island, crap. I can't believe we're still doing this. So we do get a flashback in which somehow Oliver Queen gets back onto the island, talks to his son, saying he's going to find his mom, and along the way he finds Slade, who finds Thea, who I thought was dead, but turns out to be unconscious, or at least comatose. I'm like, okay, we're really doing this island thing again, huh? God damn it. I can't believe we're doing this. Look, I really like this whole cast, okay? And it's really evident in the first episode when they're all riffing on each other. Of course, we get Felicity back. We get Laura Lance back. We also get Dinah Drake. We also get Quentin Lance. So pretty much, it appears everyone has gone off the island. The only one that we have not seen would be for Malcolm Merlyn. And from the last episode to what's going to happen. Previously, it was that Thea was on the landmine and Malcolm was able to push Thea off, and which he took over holding down the landmine with his own foot. Supposedly, we heard an explosion, but we never actually see him dying in the process. So it's still up in the air as to what is his status, as to what's going on. But God, I can't believe we're doing the island again. And I can't get over that whole island. I'm sorry. It really is a yank in my chain. This is really bad. But in any case, there is at least some type of side benefit, or as a result of what happened on the island, that's kind of like a fallout. So Oliver and his newly acquainted son basically are not on, they're barely on speaking levels, so it's hard for that relationship to go forward, and for Oliver to be in this new position to figure out how is he going to manage raising a son on his own with a son he never knew for all of his life. The other thing that I thought was interesting was that we are seeing some kind of residual effect from the explosion that Diggle experienced. Because at one point, he is holding a gun and he's not able to fire and he sees his arm shaking. So he's passing it off as it's nothing, but obviously from the very beginning in the first flashback of the island, Felicity and Diggle are running from an explosion, and just as the scene is about to close out, some kind of explosion or particle flew right into Diggle's arm, so it seems that he was injured in the process, but as to how extensive, we just don't know. So, honestly, I don't know how to feel about this episode, except that, okay, I want everyone to go forward. I don't know how much story we're going to be dealing with this damn island again. I've stuck through this series, the good and the bad, and I was happy that we got a season 6. But honestly, I can't believe we're still dealing with the island. So I'm going to just leave it at that, because the rest of the episode is fine. I had no problems with it. All right, so there is one other point aside from the island that does bug me. Towards the end of the episode, Diggle is manning the comms, and the rest of the team is at City Hall for the police graduation. Since Laurel, who is the Earth 2 Black Siren, she never arrives there. So it turns out that they're going to attack the Arrow Cave or whatever dwelling that the team is hiding out in. So Diggle is the one that has to take on this barrage of incoming fighters, and he's able to hold them off to a bit. But then Team Arrow comes in to save the day. Now, when the chaos is all going around, and that's enjoyable, there's this one moment in which Mr. Terrific is running, and he's talking to Felicity on the comms. But at one point, the camera kind of stops in front of him, and then it stops and then turns around and sees the action that's happening in front of him. So as that's going on, one of the bad guys is running towards the camera, as in running towards where Mr. Terrific is located at. Except that as he's running, the camera pans, there's no Mr. Terrific. Where did Curtis go in that moment? And then he is tackled by John Diggle seconds after that. So it always has bugged me watching that episode, or watching that one moment, that does not make sense. Why would he not tackle or stick his foot out to trip the guy running towards him? Where the hell did he go? Okay. I don't know if it was just bad editing, back directing, or just someone says, no, don't worry about it, no one's going to catch it. Well, I caught it, and it's so damn bad. Alright, I'm just going to leave it right here. I'm not going to go any further. You get the idea of how disappointed I am. But again, very happy overall with how the whole season has started for all our characters. So, I still have to catch up on at least 8 episodes for each series before I can catch up on Crisis on Earth X, which is the big crossover for all our heroes. So, this being early December, I might be able to pull off, 32 episodes of the whole thing before I get to review Crisis on Earth X. But if I do, I will try to record it before the year is out, and that will be out sometime maybe at the end of the month. Again, I am playing catch-up because this is now the busy season for me, but I'm glad to have finally done the reviews, and I hope you have enjoyed them as well. So, you can always find me on the various social networks. Please email me at monstersci-fi-show@gmail.com. Share your thoughts, your comments, anything. I would love to hear from you. So on that note, thank you very much for listening to me and to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. It's sci-fi from a certain point of view. Good night.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.